Ladies and gentlemen, this is the 12th and final round.
Right hand, Golovkin steps in and down he goes again. Unbelievable. Mayweather makes him pay. What a rookie mistake. A sensational left hook by De La Hoya.
It's facts. I'm the best. You know what I mean? Sometimes I don't want to believe in myself, but it's the truth. I'm the best.
I'm going to show you how great I am.
From Southern California, this is the Last Round Podcast.
From Southern California, Mike, every time you hear that intro, don't you just get so excited?
I get homesick, Dan.
Homesick?
I get homesick.
You've lived in Southern California for what, 6-7 years now?
Like 5 years, you know, but I miss the wind and the rain.
No, you don't. Not compared to the California sun. Thanks again, guys, for listening to episode 57 of the Last Round Podcast. I'm Danny Z, along with my co-host, Mike Shepard, in advance of... What do we got this weekend? Deontay Wilder, Luis Ortiz 2, Andrew Cancio, Rene Alvarado.
Leo Santa Cruz, Miguel Flores, Brandon Figueroa, Julio Cesar.
Julio or Hugo?
Julio.
Julio. Oh, okay. I just want to make sure because you got that accent, Mike. So the listeners gotta comprehend what you're saying, But, you know, guys, like I said, thanks again for listening, whether you're listening on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, wherever. I think we're on all of them, right? There's even some apps I didn't even know existed that we're on.
We're on all the good apps.
All the good apps. That's how you want to put it. But before we go into, you know, the previews, especially of this weekend's fights, and we talk about, you know, some recent news last week and all that stuff, we have another guest this week. What do we got? I feel like we have guests all the time. What are we, this like fourth, fifth week in a row?
I think more.
I think we've had more guests on episodes now than we've been alone.
Probably.
I think we're getting there. But this is going to be one of the most interesting shows we're going to have, because when we had mentioned to a couple people in the boxing world that he was going to be on the show, they were really intrigued just because the system that he's associated with, CompuBox, is obviously, you know, been around for decades.
It causes Twitter wars
on the social media and all that stuff. But he's the host of Inside Boxing Live on Pluto TV, and he can also be seen as a correspondent on Fox Sports Boxing Telecast. And he's also can be seen as a ringside reporter for DiBella Entertainment and play-by-play at Triton Fights on Bleacher Report Live. Dan Canobio is on the line. Thank you for joining us, man.
Danny, Mike, what's going on, guys? Thank you for having me on the show. Big fan.
Thank you very much. We appreciate it. You know, so like we said, obviously, you know, we had some people in the boxing circles, of course, especially in the media, who were very interested. Especially, I know you've given interviews, or you've talked a little bit about, of course, you know, the CompuBox thing and everything. But if you can kind of we can just start there and kind of give like a brief overview of how it began and how it came to be where it is today.
Yeah, so CompuBox is a family company. My father invented the whole concept of punch stats. That was back in 1985. He was a kind of behind-the-scenes guy. He was working at Sports Illustrated as a statistician. This is like before the internet, before like laptops. And him and his then partner at the time, Logan Hobson, were, you know, saying, you know, in boxing, there's all the only numbers they really have is the tail of the tape. I mean, there's nothing else besides that to kind of tell what's going on. You know, baseball has a box score, basketball has a box score, football, you have your stats and all that. But boxing just had a tail of the tape, you know, height, weight, reach and all that. So they came up with this program on how to count punches. It was literally just an idea. And luckily, one of them, my dad knew a guy on a softball team, believe it or not, who is who wrote code for computers. They came up with the idea. He went in and he's with his contact with Sports Illustrated, went into Ross Greenberg's office over at HBO. He was a producer back then before he eventually went on to become the president of HBO Sports. And he just said, hey, I have an idea for punch stats. And Ross Greenberg was a real innovator at the time. He was one of the guys that the first people to put, you know, microphones in corners, the overhead shot. He kind of was his idea to have Howard Letterman. So he said, yeah, all right, we'll do it. And then all of a sudden, you know, my dad is in business, 1985. The second fight or fourth fight they ever did was Hagler versus Hearns. I mean, it's been a crazy ride. just being a part of it as a son, and I've been on board since 2013. I mean, I've always been around the sport as a kid, going to fights and being around the fighters and stuff, but officially on board with CompuBox for the last 6 or 7 years, you know, working some of the biggest fights in the world all over the place. We do 120 shows a year. It's just an all-around grind. There is, as you guys know, there's no off-season in boxing. As for the technical aspects of it, it's a keypad. Each operator counts one fighter each. So for this weekend, I'll probably have Luis Ortiz, and you have a keypad, and you have a jab power, a jab miss, a jab connect. You have a power miss, a power connect, and we also have a body connect and a jab to the body. And we mostly sit ringside for the most part. But lately, we've been doing some fights from our office, too. They give us a really good feed. I mean, it's a great job. It's really nerve-wracking at times, but at this point, it's second nature to me.
So, Dan, do you actually do it yourself? You actually sit there and count the punches?
Yeah, I do. It's like a fun, like I said, a family business. My brother is the vice president of operations. He's also a punch counter. Of course, my dad, he'll do it from time to time. He's kind of the boss now, so he can kind of pick and choose who he wants to do it. And we have some guys on the West Coast. We have Lee Groves, who's like a noted boxing historian. He is our main researcher, and he does a lot of traveling too, going to fights. So yeah, we have like a group of about 6 to 8 guys that goes out all over the place, and I'm one of them.
And with CompuBox, you have a contract with, you know, certain broadcasters, and so when that comes up at the end, are there other companies that rival you that have to put in a bid?
Unfortunately, I mean, luckily for us, we've kind of cornered the market when it comes to punch stats and boxing. There have been other companies that have tried to compete, but they just either weren't accurate or, you know, they don't have the database. That's what we have. We have over like 8,000 fights going back to the, you know, well past the early 80s. So that's how we come up with our averages, because you can have punch stats, but if they don't have any context, they don't really mean anything. You know, Deontay Wilder gets hit with, you know, only 7 punches around. Okay, what does that mean though? Like, what's the heavyweight average? The heavyweight average is 15. So Deontay Wilder has really good defense because he gets hit with, you know, 7 less punches around than the average heavyweight. So as terms of contracts, we have our contracts with networks. We don't work with promoters. We work with networks. So right now we have contracts with DAZN. We have contracts with Showtime, ESPN. You know, I'm probably forgetting some because there's so damn many these days. But we pretty much do every network and every fight that you see on TV or streaming. You know, we have a presence there.
In your estimation, how often do punch stats compare with the outcome of a fight? So, you know, boxer A landed more, better percentage, and he actually comes out the winner.
What's that? Can you repeat that?
In your estimation, how often do punch stats compare with the actual outcome of a fight? So, say boxer A lands more punches, how often does he actually come out the winner of the fight?
Well, you know, the mission statement since day one is that we're not here to score fights. We're simply, it's like a barometer of activity. It's simply for the broadcaster, it's for the fans to kind of dissect what's going on in the ring. But from like a study we did a few years ago, you know, if you land more punches and you throw more punches, you're going to win the fight 90% of the time. I mean, there are also, you know, cases where a guy's down like a lot of punches, or, you know, it's a 100 punch difference and, you know, he lands one big shot, knocks him out, or lands one shot that hurts him and he takes him out in the next round. That happens, you know, every so often. I wouldn't say it happens a lot. But, you know, normally what you see with your eyes goes along with the numbers.
What was the first fight that you ever had to score, or not score, but obviously had to tally in terms of punches?
So, I mean, I mentioned that it's my dad's company, and he trained me hard. Like, I said, hey, I want to start counting punches after college. I'm tired of just going to the fights. I want to get paid now. But he made me train. Like, we have these DVDs where it's like all sorts of fights. We have fights where guys throw like, you know, 200 jabs. Guys where, you know, just throw a jab out there. Fights where guys throw a ton of punches, like the lower weight. And then we have like, you know, a few fights in the DVDs with guys like Bernard Hopkins, who are like, you know, will get in there and do dirty tactics and clinch and, you know, infighting and all that. So it took me a while to do it. But my first major fight that I counted was Manny Pacquiao, Tim Bradley 2. And this is on the heels of their first fight, which was an absolute robbery.
Right.
You know, Pacquiao outlanded him by over 100 punches. But that was nerve-wracking, but it was also like super exciting because at that point, you know, I've been training so long, and it was just like, you know, my first big fight was probably, you know, one of the most anticipated rematches at the time.
Do you ever go back and revisit some of the older classic fights like Ali Frazier, Duran Leonard, and, you know, score those just for the heck of it?
Yeah, of course. My dad is a huge boxing nut, of course. He loves Muhammad Ali. He actually just wrote a book with Lee Groves, and they went back and counted all of Ali's fights to show how many punches he got hit with. It's pretty staggering stuff to kind of like go in line with, you know, getting the Parkinson's and, you know, he got hit with he took a lot of punishment in his career, Muhammad Ali. I think he dished out more than he ultimately took, but when he went back and looked at the numbers, I mean, it's staggering the amount of punishment that Ali took. But yeah, we do count some old school fights that we were not around for.
So you said, you know, you had been going to fights and events your whole life since you were a kid, and then you finally got to a point where you're like, okay, you know, I want to get paid for this stuff too. Help me out here, Dad. So you know, you got into that, you know, counting punches and all that stuff, and then how long after did you start doing like your podcast, your show, you know, your interviewing and all that stuff? When did you get that bug when you stepped into that world?
So also doing the punch counting, because it's only on the weekend, so it allowed me to have like a full-time job. And I was working in New York City at like Bleacher Report as a production assistant producer. I worked at CBS Sports as a researcher. Did like a lot of behind the scenes stuff. And I always wanted to be on camera, and I always wanted to talk about boxing because I'm around it so much. I mean, I know the business side of things from all the contracts we have. I know the numbers better than anybody. So I'm able to tell the story a little bit. I thought that people would be interested in it. I would say like 2017, I think it was the Monday after Canelo Triple G, the first fight, is when we did our first show. And it's different than a little podcast because I'm on camera. It streams live, or streamed live at the time. And then now we package the show and it goes on Pluto TV. And it's kind of like a studio show where we have, you know, numbers and guests. So, you know, things kind of snowballed from there. I love talking boxing. And there's, like, as you guys know, there's so much to talk about, you know, just from the fights and the rumors and the business side of things. So, yeah, around 2017 is when we kind of started CompuBox TV. And it's been a blast doing that.
Yeah, man, we're fans. We're definitely fans of it. I'm especially a fan of your boxing mean tweets edition, like the Jimmy Kimmel. Hey, man.
Yeah.
When you did that, I told the first time you came out with that, I told Mike, I was like, oh, shit, I wish we thought of that.
Until yeah. Winning.
Until you know what? Yeah. Like, I mean, obviously, I took it from Jimmy Kimmel, but the way I got that idea was Bob Arum. Whenever when Bob Arum, the rumor came out, like when he got on Twitter and no one believed it was really him. And he was sending out these tweets. And I was like, is this really him? And then I got on a conference call for Top Rank. I forgot which fight it was for. And I was like, all right, it was my turn to ask the question. And I was like, my question is for Bob Arum. I'm like, do you run your Twitter? And he started laughing. And I was like, and he said, yeah, of course I do. He's like, I was like, so I wonder if you like, do you check your mentions? Do you ever look at what people say about you? And I don't think he understood what I meant. So that kind of got the ball rolling in my head. It's like, what can we do that's different out there? There's a lot of the same content. So, you know, a ton of people talk smack on Twitter. I mean, it's pretty much all boxing Twitter is. It's talking crap about each other. So I started searching up some fighters and, like, searching, like, things fans are saying about them. I was like, man, I would love to just, like, read these to these guys and see their reactions. And Bob Arum was the first one we did.
Yeah, man, that's awesome. That's a great bit, man. That's a great bit. Every time you've come out with it, you know, I'm always trying to get wilder.
Trying to get why I thought I had him in LA, but he was late, like 2 hours late to his press conference. But I have some great Wilder tweets loaded up, and then Wednesday I'm supposed to meet up with Terrence Crawford, and I got some good ones for him too.
Oh man, yeah, I'm looking forward to that, man. I'm telling you, man, you got a good one. You got a good bit there. That's awesome. So, because yeah, man, we're man enough to admit that we're jealous of that bit. Mm-hmm. You got a good one, right?
Well, you guys can come up with stuff. I mean, there's a ton of stuff out there. There's a ton of ideas. You just gotta think of them.
That's it. Got to think outside the box.
Exactly. You got to, like, you know, boxing is kind of an old sport. Like the way the media runs with it, it's just the interviews, like, you know, stick camera in their face. Don't go on camera. I think there's a lot more to be done, especially after that YouTube fight. I think it opened up a lot of people's minds.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's definitely opened up a different world. So hopefully it, you know, we go that route in terms of technology and stuff. But, you know, kind of transitioning back to the whole CompuBox thing, out of the history, and I think I've seen it once before, once or twice, who's thrown the most punches you know, from a fighter standpoint in the history of CompuBox?
You mean like cumulative or just in one fight?
Let's just go both.
Well, I don't have the number in front of me, but I do know that the Konaki Areola fight.
No way. Oh, yeah, that's right.
The one that broke all sorts of records. I was working that fight at Barclays Center, and I was with my dad, and we were like, we had the piece of paper next to us with the record, like just in case. And we were getting close to it, and now we have like a in our program for CompuBox, as we get closer to records, it will just come up on the screen. And these guys are throwing like a ton of punches. Like it was insane the amount of punches these dudes were throwing for heavyweight. And I'm starting to look at my dad. I'm like, we're getting close to the record. And then they just blew past it. And it was insane. And that's what makes it fun when you're working a live fight. What makes it different, you know, we kind of have to, we watch a lot of fights and there's some boring ones, as you guys know. And there's some fights that you just wish would end. Those are the types of nights that you remember forever. And those are the types of nights where it's extra fun because in between rounds, you're writing notes, and in between rounds, you're talking to the truck and letting them know so they can build the graphics. So I don't know offhand the most punches. I probably should, but I know that one that I was a part of was Chris Areola and Adam Konaki at the Barclays Center set the record for most punches combined thrown in a heavyweight fight, most punches landed in a heavyweight fight. Konaki threw the most punches ever in a heavyweight fight. It was literally insane.
Yeah, we had Konaki on that Monday after his fight, so that was pretty sweet. During that fight, was there a specific round or a specific, you know, moment when you knew just based on their work rate that, you know, you said you turned to your dad and you said like, hey, you know, I think we're getting there. What was there like a specific round or a specific time when you kind of knew like, okay, they're going to break it?
Yeah, because early on they were throwing like the first round, Konaki threw like 120 punches in the first round. Like that's like, crazy numbers. That's like numbers that you see like a featherweight thrower, like guys in the lower weight. And I knew coming in, like we kind of study the research packet and the study the analysis before the fight, just so we know what to look out for. And as of late, like with the program has come so far where, like I said, like as they're approaching records, they'll start to pop up on the screen, like you're this many away. And we're looking at it, we're like, holy crap, they're gonna break the record. And you know, they didn't just break it, they just like shattered it. So yeah, it's pretty exciting because like I said, there's times where you kind of slog through cards and some bad fights, but then when you have like one like that, I mean, it doesn't even feel like work.
No, you're right. Yeah, that was a wild fight. I mean, who would have thought, you know,
those two,
yeah. You know, that was definitely a surprise to a lot of people. But you know, going into like the technology behind CompuBox, you know, I'm sure you guys are always looking at ways to improve it in terms of, you know, data accuracy and, you know, technology, of course. Like, you know, is there any planned or any, you know, discussions for any type of technology or any type of, you know, to improve accuracy or like maybe like chips in boxing gloves or anything like that you guys have been working on?
Of course. I mean, we're always looking to stay ahead. We're always looking to be the best. Just lately, as of earlier this year, we came up with a new program called CompuTrack. And that is kind of measuring or keeping a track of where the guys are in the ring and where they're landing their punches. We have buttons for when they're in close. We have buttons for when they're from a distance. And you can kind of hear it. Next time you watch a fight on DAZN, and Fox has it, you know, like especially Spence Porter, they spend a lot of time fighting in close. So we have a guy now that just tracks that. And we can say something like, you know, 70% of Spence Porter was fought from close range. Which is the fight was. I mean, you saw that fight. They were banging to the body. That's just one thing that we implemented that the network seemed to like. As for the chips and the gloves, that's just never going to work. We tried to do it in the early 90s. I mean, but there's so many things that you have to get past. You know, there's so many different glove companies. And I actually talked about this with Anthony Joshua. He was asking me the same question. He was like, hey, let's put some chips and gloves to see how hard I can punch. But I had to explain to him, you know, what type of gloves you use. He said, I use, you know, Everlast, whatever, Reyes. There's Grant. There's so many different gloves that you have to pass it with each glove. Then you have to go to every commission and see if they're okay with putting a chip in a glove, which can be dangerous. And then there's certain fighters that don't want anything in their glove to mess around with it. And also, it's not accurate. It's not. There's no way you can properly do it unless the chip is in the front of the fist. If you put it on your wrist, it's not really properly calculating how hard you hit, and it's just not accurate, and there's also no context to it. Like, how do you measure it? Like, oh, that punch was what, like, how do you even say it? So I don't like, I think it's a cool idea, but I just don't think the technology is there.
What's the margin of error for the whole stats behind CompuBox? Have you guys ever, I mean, I know you guys have generated that, you know, but I mean, there's a lot of fans, obviously, especially on when Twitter wars happen, like, you know, oh, it's not accurate. They go,
I can do a whole mean tweet on the people that tweet at us that we're wrong. I'm like, okay, yeah, we're wrong. You're sitting on your couch, you're drunk. You're leaving, you're not watching the whole fight. Like, but the margin of error is 2%. We've done the test and, we're pretty damn accurate. As evidenced by being in business for 33 years now, I keep getting contracts and, you know, it's gotten to like, it's just second nature for all of our punch counters. We do so many shows. I mean, every weekend I'm either on the road or we're at our office, you know, counting the punches, but yeah, 2% margin of error. And, yeah, man.
So, you know, you were talking about lower weight classes, you know, when we were talking about Kaunaki and Areola throwing a lot of punches, that they were throwing punches like, you know, the lower divisions, the featherweights, super featherweights and stuff. Leo Santa Cruz is fighting this weekend.
Oh, geez.
So obviously, you know, I'm assuming, you know, just by us obviously being fans and, you know, in the sport, essentially, he's one of the most, one of the highest output guys in the sport right now. According to you guys, is that correct?
He's number one, actually. I do these by the numbers segments that run on PBC, telecast, and all the different platforms. And they just actually ran one last week. Santa Cruz ranks number one in punches thrown per round with 86. That's 28 more than the division average. But what also separates Cruz, Santa Cruz, is that, yeah, he's a volume puncher, but he has like really good accuracy. He lands 29 punches per round. That's good for number two among all active fighters, any weight class. The guy's a beast. And in his last fight, he threw 1,273 punches against Rafael Rivera. That's the second most of his career. It's the second most punches ever thrown in the fight in 2019. So, yeah, Leo Santa Cruz, like, just knowing, like, that he's on the card, like, I'm getting ready for it. Like, I'm stretching my fingers right now as I talk to you guys.
So, who you said he's number two. Who's number one?
Number one for punches landed in per round?
Right.
I got to pull that up. You guys put me on the spot here, man. You guys are making me do homework.
I didn't mean to. We thought we assumed you probably knew.
I'll take a guess. I'll go.
Well, my dad's listening now. My dad is listening. He's going to start screaming at his phone. I know all the answers. I don't know who's number one. I gotta look that up. But
Santa Cruz,
someone in a weight class around there.
But Santa Cruz is number two. You're sure about that?
Oh, I'm 100% sure about that. 29 landed punches per round, which is just absurd. The 86 a round, that's his average. So there's plenty of rounds where he goes like well above 120, 130. You know, that fight against Rivera, and remember in the 12th round, they just kind of like were like looked at each other the last 15 seconds and just threw like 400 punches at each other. It's like insane.
You also probably have one of your favorite ones, Deontay Wilder, on the same card, because he doesn't throw that many punches, so...
No, heavyweights outside of Kaunaki and Areola, and Dillian White throws a lot of punches too. He had a record for a while in terms of punches thrown around. But yeah, Wilder is pretty easy to count. You know, Wilder has some pretty interesting numbers. I know you guys want to talk about that fight coming up, but yeah, usually heavyweights are easier to count because they kind of just stand around and they're plodding and they throw one punch at a time. Ruiz doesn't. Ruiz is a combination puncher. But yeah, Wilder is one of the easier guys to count.
So, you know, I'm glad that you mentioned, you know, Wilder and Ortiz. Obviously, we have the rematch. And you know, do you ever, I mean, everybody deep down, whether, you know, they're writers or reporters or media correspondents or something, like, everybody's a fan at the core, of course. We're all fans and stuff. But do you yourself, especially being so involved as you are, not only, like, now on the media side and you know, like, the stats side with the CompuBox and everything, Do you ever feel the need to like try to stay as neutral as possible because of your roles within boxing?
Of course. I mean, when I go to a fight, I don't think about anything like that. I just go in there and I want to keep it as neutral as possible. I want to just simply, whatever I'm seeing in that ring is what I'm pressing on the keypad. It has zero favoritism, zero, you know, angling one way or the other. But then I'll be doing a disservice to the fans. I'd be doing a disservice to the media. I'd be doing a disservice to my company. I mean, it wouldn't add up. You know, if I if I played favoritism with this, I would have guys landing more punches than they had, and that's just wrong, and it's not right. And it's funny you bring up, being in the media as of the last 2 years, getting to interview these guys, not just spending time with them, working for CompuBox and just being around them. But now that I'm interviewing these guys, it's different. Because I went to the presser for Joshua Ruiz, and I interviewed Ruiz first, and he's like the coolest guy in the world off camera. And, he couldn't have been any cooler with doing all these interviews. And, he takes time to ask your name. And that means a lot when you're interviewing. You guys know it means a lot when you're interviewing someone that they take time to ask how you're doing and stuff. And I'm like, wow, Andy Ruiz is a cool dude. So then I go over to interview Joshua. And Joshua was like the most down-to-earth superstar I think there is in sport. I mean, that's my first time I ever met him. He's asking me about CompuBox. He's asking me a ton of questions. He's telling me I'm a big deal. I'm like, what? I was like, you're Anthony Joshua. So I come out of it. I'm like, wow. I think these dudes are awesome inside and outside the ring. But, when it comes to just doing my job, I have to play it right down the middle.
You definitely get a lot more access, in boxing than you do in, NFL, soccer and stuff like that.
Yeah, of course.
Since we were talking about Wilder, let's jump into the sort of preview of that. So, this weekend, obviously, we've got the dangerous rematch of Deontay Wilder against Luis Ortiz. So,
yeah.
Will you be working that fight?
Yes, I will. 1 second, though, before we get to that one, I got the most landed punches per round.
Oh,
I just fired up
it.
The program.
He
Gilbert Chelt. Chelt is landing one more punch per round than Leo Santa Cruz.
No way. One punch?
Santa Cruz was number one for a while. Burchell, his last like four fights, he's been like otherworldly.
You know what? That's true. Yeah. His last couple fights, he's thrown a lot. We were at the ESPN fight. His last fight right here
against Jason Sosa,
and he did throw
a lot.
Yeah,
that was disgusting what he did.
Yeah,
those body shots were unbelievable.
I mean, he's absurd. He's probably that dude's going places. I mean, he throws. He doesn't just throw punches. He lands them because look at that. He's got lands more than Leo Santa Cruz, and he's number two thrown per round at 81.1. So he's coming right up Santa Cruz behind here. But you take a look at some of the total landed per round, the leaders: Burchelt number one, Santa Cruz number two, Mickey Roman number three, Francisco Vargas number four, Juan Francisco Estrada in a way, and then you get into Golovkin and then Spence. Those two are just like insane for their size. But for the most part, as you can see, it's all the lower level guys.
When do you guys actually make a fighter inactive in terms of that? Like a Mayweather, for example, who, seems to retire and then come back like a year and a half, two, 3 years later. Like, is he already removed from active rankings?
I mean, yeah, he's been removed. I mean, if you count the McGregor fight, I mean, what was that, 2017? But before that, I mean, what was his last fight? Berto?
Yeah.
So you got to remove him. Yeah, he was the plus-minus leader for a while. I don't think anyone's going to go near his plus-minus ranking. I think it was 24 when he retired. I'm pretty sure that Lomachenko is our leader right now at plus-minus, and that is subtracting your connect percentage from your defense. And Lomachenko is a plus 17. Bivol is a plus 15.4. You got Crawford in the mix. Inoue is sneaking up in the plus minus, but Mayweather had the most. He was like, hit, don't get hit. And he loved that stat, so you bring it up to him. He loved, whenever I saw him, I would say, hey, Floyd, he's still number one in plus minus, and he loved that. He was 24 plus minus, which is crazy.
That's wild. And you're right. Nobody's probably ever going to come close to that, or at least not anytime soon. But, obviously touching on Wilder and the Luis Ortiz rematch this Saturday in Las Vegas from the MGM Grand. On Fox pay-per-view, you're working that fight. So, we're not going to ask you who you're picking and stuff like that, but what's your take on it from an unbiased standpoint, of course?
I mean, it's funny. This happens in boxing all the time, and I'm sure you guys can attest to this. When a fight gets announced, you're just like, okay, I guess I'll watch it because I'm a boxing junkie. I'll watch the fight, but like, I'm not really excited about it. And that was certainly my stance on Wilder versus Ortiz too. Like, we saw this already. Wilder kept talking about how it was dramatic. Yeah, it had like a few dramatic moments, but the first five rounds were pretty boring. I mean, they threw like 30 punches around. But as we're getting closer and closer, and I think Fox and PBC have done a really good job promoting this fight, you know, as I watch the fight camp, as I watch, you know, countdown, and as I go on Instagram and Twitter and I see Deontay Wilder literally everywhere. I watch NFL Sunday, he's on it. I watch college football Saturday, he's there. I'm getting more and more into this fight. I think it's an intriguing fight, and I think it's a good heavyweight fight. I mean, how many times have we seen mismatches in the heavyweight division? But, like, let's be honest, Luis Ortiz is a live dog here. The guy's in the best shape of his life. We're seeing pictures of him emerge with he's starting to get abs, which is scary.
Yeah.
A guy at 40 years old, or I think he's 40. but, I mean, this fight it's going to be a good fight. I think it's a heavyweight fight between two guys that are in the top five, arguably, in their division. I don't know where you have Ortiz, but top five, top six. I mean, and it's Deontay Wilder. I feel like I said this on the PBC Countdown show. He is must-watch TV when it comes to boxing. He's either going to knock someone out or he's going to look crazy doing it. So I'm getting more and more primed up for this fight. And let's be honest, if the winner, once Deontay Wilder wins, or should he win, we start banging the drum for the Fury rematch. So there's stuff to watch during the fight. And then afterwards, I want to see what exactly happens with Wilder if he's going to fight Fury after all.
What's your take? Do you think it's a big gamble fighting, you know, now and then fighting Tyson Fury in February?
Yeah, I mean, Wilder needs to be, like, applauded here. I mean, people were getting on him for the majority of his career because he fought nobody as he was kind of learning on the job. Didn't have a lot of amateur experience. Yeah, he won a bronze medal in the heavyweight division, but if you take a look at the heavyweights in the Olympics, it's kind of a small pool. But, you know, you got to give him credit here. He could have fought an easy touch. You look at who Tyson Fury has fought since he fought Deontay Wilder. You know, Tom Schwartz, who, let's be honest, did not belong in there. Otto Wallin, who on paper was not supposed to give Tyson Fury any problems, but he ended up giving him more than he really bargained for. You know, Wilder is fighting Luis Ortiz. He does not have to fight Luis Ortiz. He could fight anybody right now and get $20 million, and then we set ourselves up for the mega rematch in February. You got to give Wilder credit. I mean, you got to give this guy credit. He's crazy when he's in the ring, and he does not have to take this fight. But now here he is fighting Luis Ortiz.
Do you think, well, this kind of makes him choose a side, but, like, you know, if, you know, do you think that Wilder is the biggest knockout puncher in the game right now?
Oh, he is, without a doubt. I mean, he broke a record in that last fight with Brazil. It was his 39th knockout it wasn't the Brazil fight, but it was one of the fights earlier. It was his 39th knockout in his 40th fight, which had never been done before in the heavyweight division. I mean, who else is up there? I mean, he knocked everyone out that he's fought, besides Tyson Fury. He knocked him down twice. I don't think he's ever had a fight where he hasn't knocked someone down. I mean, the first Stavern fight, he didn't technically knock him down, but in that first round, he had him stunned, and he could have been called a knockdown in that first round. I mean, without a doubt, I think he's the knockout artist in boxing right now.
You know, talking about a Wilder knockout or a knockout punch, of course, do you guys measure speed as well? You know, like in Major League Baseball, when, you know, they hit, you know, a home run or something like that, like a minute or so after, they'll say, oh, that left the park at, you know, 145 miles an hour or something like that. Have you guys ever thought about measuring? I mean, I don't know how you would do it, but measuring like the
speed of
a punch.
Well, that just goes back to the whole chip thing. I mean, the only way to do it is with a chip, and just explained how that's not accurate. I mean, it's interesting as all hell. I mean, I would love to get some more analytics involved in terms of, like, you know, AWS. I don't know what baseball has, the launch angle and the...
Right.
They have all sorts of crazy stats. I mean, it's just a matter of time, and that's something we're always working on.
No, right, yeah. Because when you touched on Wilder and then you mentioned the Brazil fight, I mean, that straight right hand that he knocked them out with, you know, that's the first thing that popped in my mind. So, you know,
I mean, they had that thing on PBC, the show, that machine that you can see in, like, Dave and Buster's or, like...
Right, right.
But I don't know how accurate that thing is because, you know, some of the numbers are way off.
So, you know, I know obviously your dad, you know, started the company and stuff, but especially because he's been in the sport of boxing for so long, what was his take when HBO announced that they were exiting the boxing business? Because, I mean, he's been there a long time, and HBO obviously was a staple.
Dude. Be honest with you, it was like a loss of a family member.
Oh, wow.
I mean, they were our first client. They were the ones that took a chance on my dad, and they were the ones that we built up a relationship with for 30 years. For the first 15 years of CompuBox, it was only ESPN and HBO that we worked with. But for the first 10 years, of CompuBox. It was just HBO. You know, I grew up around Michael Buffer. I grew up around Jim Lampley. I grew up around George Foreman. You know, my dad made lifelong friends with, you know, the people that you would never, you know, think about when you're watching HBO fight. Those are the producers. Those are the executive producers. Those are the technical guys. You know, the people in the truck that, you know, did the Emmy-winning award productions of HBO. I mean, they were, I would never in my wildest dreams growing up that I think that HBO would ever get out of boxing. But, you know, as you guys know, boxing is one of the most volatile businesses in all of the world. And it was, you know, we started to see it when I think it was Ken Hirschman, the president at the time, who said we're no longer doing business with Al Haymon.
Right.
That was the beginning of the end for HBO because they were no longer putting on premier events. You know, they were losing. Showtime was starting to steal away some of the shine. That never was the case in the 90s. Showtime was always a close second to HBO, and they were like unheralded. So, yeah, it was a rough time for my dad, of course, because, you know, they're the ones that gave him his shot and allowed him to work in the sport of boxing. But also affected me, you know, because I had a lot of friends at HBO. A lot of them that were out of jobs, but, you know, they've all landed on their feet. But man, I miss Jim Lampley. Yeah. I miss Jim Lampley so much.
Right. No, absolutely. Yeah. I hope, you know, we hope that he gets, I think from what we heard is he still has a contract with HBO. So they're still kind of holding on to him. So, but you know,
yeah, he's got this producer contract. I mean, he hasn't really produced anything for HBO. I mean, that guy loves eat and breathe boxing. I mean, I had him on my podcast earlier this year, and he told me a hilarious story about he was watching the NCAA tournament, and he was at a bar, and he just started talking, you know, a little loud, and people started to gather around him. And he said, by the time you knew it, at the bar, he had an audience around him, and he was just broadcasting. Just doing what he does. I thought that was absolutely hilarious. Somewhere in North Carolina, you know, or LA, wherever he's at these days, Jim Lampley was holding court, you know, doing what he does, broadcasting and had an audience around him. I don't think we saw the last of Jim Lampley. I think he'll call a fight somehow, some way.
Do you think HBO comes back, maybe? Because, I mean, like, even though they did exit the business, like, it didn't really seem like they said this is, you know, the end all be all, you know, like, I mean, they still have, you know, obviously their YouTube is still on there with all the fights, all their content, their Twitter, all that stuff. So stuff, the foundation is kind of still there, which kind of, at least to us, kind of still shows like maybe they're leaving the door open for possibly something in the future. If it works out, you know, obviously financially, what do you think?
I mean, never say never. I mean, crazier things have happened, especially in the world of boxing. I mean, who would have thought the Zone would come along? Would you ever think that you'd be watching fights on your phone?
Right.
A few years ago? So, yeah, you're right. It's cyclical. I mean, you know, one day guys aren't working with one network. Next time they're working with networks. I mean, just look at the state that Showtime is in. I think that Showtime will bounce back next year. But, you know, crazy things that happen in boxing. It changes like year to year. So I wouldn't be shocked if HBO came back, but I don't expect it anytime soon. I think, you know, they're focusing on all different sorts of things. They're trying to compete with Netflix and the same thing with Showtime. They're trying to compete with other, you know, entities other than just, you know, other boxing platforms.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, you know, Dan, you know, we appreciate it. We know you're on the East Coast, but you'll be in Vegas at the end of the week. So, but we know you're on the East Coast right now. So you're a couple hours ahead of us over here in LA, of course. So we appreciate the time you gave us tonight. So, you know, before we let you go, you know, I know we already plugged it at the beginning, but go ahead and plug, obviously, your show on Pluto TV and you know, all your projects and all your gigs that you got coming up. Go ahead. The floor is yours, man.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, so you can follow me on Twitter at Dan Canobio. Same thing on Instagram. And I post a lot of stats. I post a lot of interviews that I do. My next show that we're doing, Inside Boxing Live, that is on iTunes and all the places you get your podcast, as well as Pluto TV. If you want to watch the show, you can watch it on Pluto TV, their fight channel. Got a big show coming up on Monday. We're going to do our standing eight count segment where we debate eight of the biggest topics in boxing. I do that with a former HBO boxing producer, Kern Bhatia. And then we're also got interviews lined up with Teofimo Lopez. I'm going to go down to his gym tomorrow in New Jersey. And also hopefully get this this mean tweet with Terrence Crawford and have it ready for the show. So that's where you can find me. And also see me on Fox. You know, occasionally I will you'll see me on PBC Countdown or you'll see me by the number. So I kind of do a lot of different things. And, of course, DiBella Entertainment. I was just in Salt Lake City this past weekend as part of the broadcast team for that junior FA fight. Broadway Boxing is doing a lot of big things in 2020. You're going to be on UFC Fight Pass. So a lot of different ways you can watch me and listen to me. If you really want to hear more of what I have to say, flap my gums about boxing, you can just follow me on social media. It's the best way to keep up.
That's sweet, man. Like we mentioned multiple times already, like a broken record, we're big fans of your stuff, man. So, you know, keep churning it out. You know, we're you got a lot of fans out there, especially us in the media. You know, we like to support our own boxing colleagues. So keep doing your thing, man.
I really appreciate that, Mike and Danny. It's a great podcast. Last round. I like the graphic that you guys have. the picture I'm looking at right now. It's awesome. You guys do great work, and I really appreciate you having me on.
You got it, man. You take care, and we look forward to all your work in the future.
All right. Thanks, guys.
You got it. So we got Wilder Ortiz, which we already touched on. We have Andrew Cancio, Rene Alvarado. Let's just jump into that one. Rematch from 2016, right?
December 2015.
By the way, before jump in, that was... I think that was arguably one of the best interviews we've ever done. Like when you were coordinating with him to book him on the show, I was like, oh, the hell yeah, that's a good one, you know? Because like obviously, you know, his, like he mentioned his family with CompuBox and all that stuff. Like that's an interesting story, you know. It's an interesting topic for not just boxing fans, of course, but I think even casual fans would like to know about that, because any type of sport, even if it's a major sport or not or whatever it is, has some type of statistics behind it, you know? And people are interested behind that, like, oh, you know, yeah, how does that work, you know? Because when you see them on the screen, people automatically think it's, like, computerized, like, oh, yeah, stuff. But, like, no, like, these are guys – oh, I just hit the mic. These are guys who are, like he said, they've got, like, keypads, and they're, like a manual thing. They're just watching and boom, 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 boom.
No, exactly. It's, you know, pretty much every fight that you watch now, you know, DAZN, Fox – they all use CompuBox. And I would assume maybe the casual fan, because it's called CompuBox, they probably think it's just done by a computer. And it's 100% accurate, but it's actually done by, you know.
The 2% margin of error, that's impressive.
That is impressive, you know. And then all the Twitter wars that go on every Friday and Saturday after you watch it. So I think, you know, most people will be quite intrigued to hear what Dan had to say.
Yeah, no, that was great. So, you know, we give big thanks to him for jumping on this week on the last round. And like we said, El Chango, Andrew Cancio, WBA 130-pound world champion, who was on the show last week. So, you know, if you want to hear him talk about his fight this weekend and the other fights of at 130 pounds the last couple weeks and, you know, the future and other plans, listen to last week's show. You know, Cancio was on the show and gave us some good stuff. So take a listen if you have some time. Obviously, Rene Alvarado worked his way back up to his mandatory position. This is a mandatory fight. So Cancio is coming off of two fights this year against Machado where he stopped him twice. The first one, people, you know, he had critics. People thought it was a fluke. Comes back, knocks him out again. So, hey, can you really call it a fluke? And even then, I asked him last week, like, do you still feel like you're fighting for that respect, you know, even though you beat Machado twice? And he said, yeah, you know, he still feels like he is. I think Cancio is that type of guy that like he's always going to be in exciting fights. Like, he forces you to be in an exciting fight, especially now that he's, like, a world champion and, like, you know, that world champion mentality is in him now. I feel like he's always going to bring out the fight in you. What do you think?
I agree. I think, you know, kind of going back to what you said about, you know, he's still fighting for kind of, like, the respect in the division. I think a lot of people, obviously, he was the underdog going in, and then, you know, the excuse everybody kind of gave the first time, including myself, was, you know, Machado just struggled to make weight. And you could see that early on, you know, he went to the body and then that was why he won. You know, he went into the rematch. He did it again, even bigger and better this time. You know, he finished him off quicker than he did the first time. So I think, you know, everybody then went to the excuse of, well, Cancio just had his number. You know, the styles matched up and Cancio just had his number for that day. So I think Cancio is kind of fighting to kind of get people's respect. So, you know, fighting somebody a different style in Rene Alvarado, you know, should hopefully win over some of those critics. But I think Cancio will probably win this. I think Rene Alvarado, you know, he's come back and worked his way back up to the position for a title shot. But he didn't really beat anybody of note, in my opinion. You know, a lot of those fights were on kind of buried away on undercards. So good fight for Cancio. You know, he's on his home turf in Fantasy Springs. You know, it'll be a sellout crowd, good atmosphere. I think Cancio will probably stop Alvarado in a war.
Yeah. No, I agree. I mean, look at it. I know you mentioned that, you know, Rene Alvarado hasn't really been anybody of note leading up to this fight. And, you know, I don't disagree with that. But, I mean, like, if you kind of compare it to Cancio before he fought Machado, who did Cancio beat before he fought Machado? He was just fortunate enough to get that title shot, and you know, which was obviously, you know, it was a Golden Boy, you know, essentially Golden Boy fighters and stuff like that. Or Machado's like a Kodo Promotions guy, but they're all working together, so you know, like the politics lined up, of course. But I mean, for Cancio, it was the same thing. You know, he was just fortunate enough to be in that spot, and he capitalized on it. So I mean, for Rene Alvarado, it could, who knows, maybe it could be the same thing.
No, that's true, and it's 2019, and as we've known for the last 11 months now, it's kind of the year of the underdog.
Yeah.
You know, we've had Andy, I've been picking Ruiz, them all year, Mike Cancio, so.
I've been picking the underdog all year. You know that.
You could be right, but I think it's probably a little bit too far for Rene Alvarado. I think he's a little bit long in the tooth. But, you know, prove me wrong.
Look, like I mentioned, he knocked out Cancio. It was actually 2015, December, a month before 2016. Cancio knocked out Alvarado in the eighth round, which was also a fantasy spring. So deja vu, 4 years later, essentially. And like you said, that place is probably likely going to be sold out because Cancio, who grew up in Blythe, California, which is what, 2 hours past the Coachella Valley, something like that, or further? I don't know. It's pretty deep out there. It's pretty deep out there. You know, and then a lot of people in the Coachella Valley, I'm assuming, who are from Blythe, probably live in the Coachella Valley now, so they come and support their own. So, you know, if you're in the Southern California market and you don't have anything to do on Saturday and you're willing to drive out to the Coachella Valley, those atmospheres for Cancio fights, especially these last two ones against Machado, were fun. Like, his fans show up and they're fun, man. So, and obviously Cancio shows that he's can deliver knockouts in his last two fights. So it's a fun atmosphere. It's a casino. There's bars in there, you know, because you want to gamble as casinos. So, you know, if you're looking for a night out and enjoy some good fights, that's not a bad place to go.
Cheapest tickets, $35.
Yeah.
Compared to, I think, Wilder, which is struggling to sell out in Las Vegas. I think the cheapest ticket's like $150.
Yeah. That's going to be a good fight too, though. Like Dan said, you know, at first the hype behind the rematch against Ortiz wasn't really there. But, I mean, the closer it does get to this Saturday, I am intrigued by it. Like, you know, I mean, it's a lot better, actually. You know, I want to make sure I differentiate that. It's a lot better that Wilder's fighting Luis Ortiz than fighting, like, somebody else, you know? Because, like, normally he could have been taking the Tyson Fury route right now where he fought, you know, Tom Schwartz and Otto Wallin or something like that. Even though Otto Wallin kind of gave him a really rugged fight, Wilder's showing you know, that he's like, no, he's like, I mean, he like Dan said, and everybody, you know, obviously boxing Twitter, the pictures that show Luis Ortiz right now, he looks really good. So that could be a dangerous fight too. So I don't know. We'll see. But with Cancio, I think I agree with you. I think he stops him inside six. You know what? I think he does body shots too. I think that's his calling card now. This is the body shots. I think that's where he's at.
I believe so. I think he maybe a little bit later. I think round 7 or 8. And I think, you know, Cancio now probably should change his nickname to the Body Snatcher, because it just seems to go to work to that body, and it seems to be working for him. So,
yeah. So that's this Saturday on DAZN USA from the Fantasy Springs Casino in the Coachella Valley, Indio, California. And then the co-main event, my guy, he's back. Kanzu, he has a WBA 126-pound world title. So the division right below Cancio, he's at featherweight, goes up against Manny Robles III. He's related to Manny Robles, the trainer, right?
It's Manny Robles, the trainer's son.
Right? Yeah, okay. Because, like, it is kind of a common name. So every time I see it, I want to be sure because, you know, I mean, what's the most common name, like, in England or something?
John Smith.
You're lying.
I'll be up there.
Is it really?
I would imagine so.
or Mike Shepard.
Yeah.
Or Mike Shepard.
That's why I had to move.
So you had to get at it to build your own identity. Yeah. Build your own identity. So Kanzu, comes back and defends his WBA featherweight world title against Manny Robles III, as I mentioned, who's undefeated. Manny Robles III is 18-0. No losses. Kanzu has two losses on his record, 17-2. I remember when we saw Kanzu, I think when he won the title, right, at Fantasy Springs? Was it Fantasy Springs? Or what did he win it at?
I think he won it.
I remember he was just really grateful for Golden Boy. He was like, yeah, Golden Boy. I just thought it was like hilarious, but it was like such a cool moment.
Yeah, he won it.
I'm a fan.
In the U.S., he beat Jesus Rojas by decision in Houston in January.
Houston, what?
Then returned to China to make his first defense in May, a six-round knockout over former junior featherweight world titleist Shung Kaibo. I assume that's how you pronounce it.
I don't know. I always defer to you on the pronunciation, so I assume it's right.
Let's hope so.
So Kanzu, who do you got in this one? This is actually, I mean, on paper, this is pretty, I mean, you know, Manny Robles is obviously going to be there in his corner as a trainer.
I believe Manny Robles is obviously going to be training his son and then is going to be leaving shortly afterwards to
Saudi Arabia
for the big fight.
But imagine that though, if his son can beat Kanzu. And I know it's not Kanzu, so people who are like out there saying like, that's not how you pronounce it. I think it's Zhu Kan or something like that. But I just think it's like, for marketing purposes, you better call him Kanzu. Like, you can do this. I'm just saying, from a marketing imaging standpoint, it's Kanzu. But going back to, you know, Manny Robles, imagine if his son wins the title this Saturday and then he goes to Saudi Arabia and Ruiz stops Joshua again. Like, what a role he's on.
Yeah, that would be an unbelievable year and a kind of a huge turnaround because, as you know,
Valdez left him and all that stuff. Yeah.
I was going to say, you know, at the start of the year, you know, you had like a few people leave him and, you know, Legends Gym kind of took a little bit of a hit. And then suddenly Andy Ruiz comes in and boom, changes it all around. Just, you know, one big fighter going in there winning the world title changes everything. So it'd be a huge turnaround for him. But unfortunately, I think Kanzu is just better technical fighter. I think it's going to be a step too far for Manny Robles, who's really kind of jumping up, I would say, from domestic level straight up to a world title fight with Kanzu.
Yeah.
I think it goes 12 rounds, and I think Kanzu gets the decision on the night.
It's an intriguing matchup on paper, though. It really is. So, and I mean, with Manny Robles as your trainer and your dad, I mean, you know, right now you can't really ask for anybody better to train you. So I can understand the intrigue behind it. And then, you know, I know we kind of mentioned it earlier, but going back to the Fox pay-per-view this week, Wilder and Ortiz, the co-main is Leo Santa Cruz's debut at 130 pounds, right? Where he fights Miguel Flores for the, what is it? What?
WBA Super World Super Featherweight.
So Flores is ranked what?
Flores was up there, and he was supposed to, this is a rearranged fight from earlier in the year, if you remember.
I thought he's like high, like he's not like he's, his ranking is like ridiculous, like it's high. And I don't mean high in the sense like he's top five or something. I'm talking about, or it's low, is what I'm saying.
I think it's one of those ones where they've statistically put, like, you know, they've strategically placed him high enough to get this fight.
No, yeah, I understand, but like I think you know, and then some cool. One of our friends of the show, Mr. Boxing Guru. Shout out to Mr. Boxing Guru and his podcast, the Mr. Boxing Guru podcast. We're fans of that too. He tweeted out something about, I saw his tweet. He said, did anybody know Leo was fighting this weekend? And then he got people to respond and stuff like that. And it was an interesting, you know, social media back and forth. But somebody, I saw a tweet that said, you know, Leo Santa Cruz kind of has lost his hype over the last couple of years. You know, he fought Frampton twice and he was on a roll and all that stuff. He fought Mahrez and stuff like that. But like, you know, the hype behind him isn't really there anymore. You know, like he's kind of just kind of going with the flow. Even though he's exciting, he throws a lot of punches and stuff like that. You know, obviously like Dan said, he's number two, I think, in punches thrown or landed or both.
Both, I believe.
But I mean, like, in terms of fighting, like, you know, he didn't fight Gary Russell at 126, you know, even though they're both under the PBC banner, you know, and now he moves up to 130 at his first fight at 130 and he gets a world title shot. You know, I mean, I get it when you're a world champion at the weight behind you and going up, like, it's, you know, there's like rules right there where you can get a world title shot or you become a challenger or something like that. But I mean, like, he didn't, he fought Frampton twice, Mahrez twice. He didn't fight Gary Russell. Now he's in a division with Oscar Valdez, who just moved up. Joseph Diaz Jr. is up there. Tevin Farmer's up there. Who else is there? Lomachenko says he can go back to 130, you know? So, I mean, I don't know. I like Santa Cruz and stuff, but I just think that his personality is so, like, so timid. Mm-hmm. Like, when he gets in there, he's a fighter. I'm not doubting that. But, you know, he just seems like very, like, you know, let's just go with the flow and stuff. Like, whatever they tell him to do, he'll do it. Like, oh, yeah, that's who I'm fighting? Cool. You know? And he's just like, yeah, I want to fight these guys. Yeah, yeah. But if, you know, Al Heyman or his team come, like, oh, no, we're going to fight this guy. All right, cool, let's do it. You know? I mean, hey, you can't hate on the guy. He's a millionaire. He's multimillionaire. He's able to take care of his family, especially his dad, you know, who has been ill for the last couple of years, which is, you know, that's cool. That's awesome. But, you know, just because, you know, he is one of the most talented fighters in the game right now, you know, you want to see him in the best fights, you know, like against a Santa Cruz, against a Joseph Diaz Jr., against an Andrew Cancio and stuff like that, you know, against a Miguel Burchell. We want to see that stuff. We want to see it. What do you think?
I would agree with that. I think the problem, you know, looking from the outside in Elias Santa Cruz is, you know, he's a PBC fighter and Al Heyman's kind of well known for, you know, hey, Leo, you're going to get $1 million for your next fight, regardless of who you fight. So why would he go and fight, you know, a big, tough, strong opponent when he can fight, you know, a local taxi driver for the same price? That's the problem I find that with Al Heyman. You know, he protects his fighters, he pays them very well, but for us, you want to see the big fights. You know, if he's going to fight somebody that's a knockover, then he should get knockover money. If he's going to fight someone of a big name, then, you know, that's when he deserves the money. I'm hoping, though, with him coming to, you know, the later part of his career, that he decides to fight those big names because they should hopefully be bigger paydays.
You're right.
You know, fighting like a Carl Frampton and Oscar Valdez or someone like that, I hope leads to bigger paydays instead of just fighting these easy little gimme fights. You know, because obviously this fight is actually for a fourth weight class. You know, he would be a world champion in a fourth weight class, you know, like Mikey Garcia tried to do, like Canelo just did. So
you're right. No, you're right. I agree with you. I mean, you know, and then the whole, I mean, obviously that's been a criticism of PBC Al Heyman for a long time. And I mean, you know, every promoter obviously tries to get their guys paid. You know, I'm not doubting that. It's not just a PBC thing. You know, Golden Boy does that to Top Rank. It's a business at the end of the day. And then their fighters are like their employees, obviously. So they're trying to get them paid as much, you know, as possible. I understand that, you know. And then especially going back to the Al Heyman thing, we've heard before from fighters in his stable that say, you know, that Al Heyman is very like, okay, like, you know, especially when you get signed, like, okay, what's the plan for after boxing? You know, it's not like, okay, what's the plan now? Like, how much am I getting paid now? Like, no, like we're planning for your life after boxing because this isn't going to last. And I think that's a very, very smart move. That's, you know, that's thinking out ahead of the game outside the box. So, you know, there's pros and cons to all of it. And of course the fans want to see the best fights, best fight the best, but you know, it is what it is. And we keep watching. So we keep watching, even though sometimes there's a lot of letdowns, but that's boxing for you. And you know, other sports too, but it is what it is. We're still going to be fans at the end of the day. And then, you know, really quick touching on, there's also this is on Saturday, right? From, the Echo Arena in Liverpool, UK, your motherland, Mike, on DAZN, Callum Smith, who is a potential opponent for Canelo Alvarez, which I don't think he'll fight. He's too big. He's 6'3", man. 26-0 puts up his WBA super middleweight and WBC diamond super middleweight champion world championships against John Ryder at 28-4. What do you think?
I think it should be a gimme fight, really, for Callum Smith. I'm kind of disappointed in the opponent, really, because I think he's, you know, he had a lot of momentum behind him after winning the World Boxing Super Series. And it's been how long since he really fought? You know, kind of wasted that momentum, in my opinion. He fought, was it Hassan Undam on the undercard of Anthony Joshua? Good performance in that. And then, you know, onto John Ryder when, you know, kind of everybody was chasing those bigger names like a, you know, a Triple G, a Canelo, Billy Joe Saunders, and a big British dust-up. So hopefully next year, you know, he moves on, because obviously he could end up fighting at light heavyweight, because he's very, very big for that division. So,
yeah, he's big, man. I don't think Canelo. I know, because he's at 168 and stuff. You know, he's obviously Canelo's like now, like his opponents, his options have stretched out from 160 to 175 essentially. But I just think Callum Smith is. Canelo obviously would still probably be the likely favorite, but I think Callum Smith is too young. He'd be the tallest guy he's ever fought at 6'3". And his skill set is, you know, I'm not saying Canelo's like afraid. I'm not going to say that, but I just think it's too much of a risk. Like, they even said before that, like, they chose Kovalev because they thought, no, we can beat this guy. He's old enough. Like, you know, I don't think you can look at Callum Smith like that. I don't think a fight with Callum Smith will happen. And if it does, which would, I think, be extremely surprised, you got to put a fight like that in, like, England at a Wembley Stadium or something like that.
That's what everyone's hoping, that, you know, he gets to
fight.
Which
it won't, but it'd be awesome.
No, I agree. You know, everybody in England, and I think, you know, Callum Smith's openly said he'd love to fight him at Liverpool Stadium, Anfield. But, you know, when you're the biggest draw in boxing, Canelo, oh, yeah, he's fighting when he says.
Yeah, you call the shots.
Yeah, he's, you know, it's all down to him when he says, where he says. So, you know, you'd have to jump through hoops because, you know, it's the biggest payday. Look at Kovalev. Like, okay, oh, yeah, you know, it's 8 weeks after our last fought. You're fighting for this prize. Boom, boom, boom. Kovalev's obviously going to say yes. Biggest payday he's ever had. So.
You're right. Well, on that note, you know, thank you for listening again to the Last Round Podcast, episode 57. Once again, we want to give our big thanks to Dan Canobio of Inside Boxing Live on Pluto TV and CompuBox. He's also a correspondent on Fox Sports Boxing Telegas. He said he'll be at the Ortiz Wilder rematch this Saturday in Vegas. So he's a very knowledgeable guy, you know. Like I said, we're big fans, so we appreciate him coming on and lending his knowledge about CompuBox and just the sport in general, lending his knowledge to our show. We appreciate it. But once again, Mike, tell them where they can follow us.
Twitter and Instagram at The Last Round 12. And don't miss us next week. Obviously, we'll be giving you the review of the Deontay Wilder, Luis Ortiz, Leo Santa Cruz fights.
Is then next week is Ruiz Joshua or no?
Week after.
Okay, so we're almost there. So once again, guys, thank you for listening to episode 57. I'm Danny Z for Michael Shepard. This is The Last Round.
Thanks for supporting and listening to the show. Follow us at The Last Round 12 on social media. Rate, review, and subscribe. This is The Last Round Podcast.